Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Rod, last week I said that game against the Vikings was a little bit cathartic in the sense that I knew we were going to talk about it. I sensed that they were going to lose that game. Maybe not lose, but I sensed they were going to struggle in Minnesota for all the reasons we talked about. But this game, they had what's less than zero, because they had that many reasons to lose this football game, and they still lost the game. 49ers lose to the Rams, a game in which they were in control just about the entire way. And they lose late on a field goal, on a maybe a mismanagement offensively and defensively late. Overall bummer of a game. One of the worst Shanahan regular season losses since the team has been very competitive, at least that I can think of.
Yeah. I guess maybe sometimes it's to my detriment that I have such institutional knowledge about this team. But I tell you what, man, the beginning of the game, actually, I was watching it on my phone. I was at the golf course, and on social media, all of the talk, once they went up 14-0, it was like, you know, like this is like the game is over. And I'm like, I mean, it could be. I mean, in the next stanza of this game, they can either put their foot on these dudes' throat or not. And we definitely did not. And it just like they just kept. I thought of my man Teddy KGB in Rounders. He's hanging around. It was, and that was the game. It was, and then the end of it, it was like Shakespearean. He misses, and then it's all. I mean, I'm not supposed to say that because I am a fan of the players. But I felt after he missed that kick, I felt like it was over. I just knew something horrible was going to happen. And I'm not saying I called the 50-yard return, but the foreboding I felt was just palpable in my household that this just did not feel good to me at all. And here we are at 1-2.
You said on social media that at 14-0, people thought it was over. I absolutely did not. My buddy and co-host on Thompson & Clark, and I'm sure I will get his thoughts on this game tomorrow because we're recording our Giants show tomorrow. But you could see my text to him, and my kids were on it too because we have a shared Giants text that we were just using for the game. And everything was like, they're just kind of letting them hang around. Like, there's no urgency to put these guys away. Like, they don't, it's almost like they don't really fear Stafford because of the receivers
and the offensive line. And
offensive line. And with that supposedly terrible offensive line, they were able to control the football, especially in the second half. And I the whole time I'm watching, I'm going like, I don't sense that there's urgency. I sense that Shanahan is a little worried about his own personnel and the guys that he wants to design plays for. So he's playing really conservative. And then the one time that we needed them to play conservative and go stretch the clock on the last drive, he goes three passes in a row and Brock is running for his life in the fourth quarter. And that right there tells me we need to do something else, because when Brock is running, that is not a good thing. Brock had 10 rushes for 41 yards. Mm-mm. And the only ones that were designed were the quarterback sneaks. Those are the only ones.
You said early on, and it was so apropos, was that it had the feel of like a preseason game.
Yeah, it was almost like I was waiting after they had scored the two touchdowns. I was like, oh, okay, we're about to see Josh Dobbs.
Yeah, it's just like we're gonna wrap it up and put Brock on bubble wrap like this game was over, when there was no like sense of urgency. I never felt like when we went up the 14-0, I never felt like, okay, we need to stick a dagger in these dudes and just finish them off. I never got that sense that they felt like they were in a position right now to finish these dudes.
We'll hit one theme that I thought about. And then we'll just go into our things that we liked, which my list on the things that we liked is a little bit smaller than the things that we didn't like, just like last week. But the one theme I was thinking about as I was watching this game, and I was trying to be sympathetic to a play caller in today's NFL, how he does it, because the one real thing on Shanahan, which we're not sure if it's fair or not, is that the narrative that he can't hold leads. Now, it is clear to me, at least my eyes, I don't have the data. I'm sure somebody has the data. It is clear to me that he definitely changes the way that he calls plays when the Niners have a short lead versus when the Niners are behind. Like, he looks like he's having a ball calling plays when he has to come back in a game. And he looks almost uncomfortable calling plays when it's just like kind of like a ho-hum, like, which is the reverse of Harbaugh, right? When Harbaugh got a lead, he was like, okay, we're going to stretch this 10-point lead and it's going to be a 25, 30-point lead because we're just going to punish the other team. But then if the Niners had to come back because their defense wasn't holding strong, then it was like all this craziness from Kaepernick running around and doing crazy stuff to come back. But in this case for Shanahan, it just looks like that 14-point lead is like the worst thing that could happen to him. Almost like he doesn't want it. Like, he'd rather the game be closer so that he could open it up. And it's just really weird to me. So the reason I bring this up is because they're up 14-0. Then it's 21-7. And again, as we were talking, when he finally decides to open it up and let Brock go is when I thought, this is me with my modicum of football knowledge compared to Shanahan, and Shanahan has forgotten more about football than I'll ever know, but the pressure on him seemed like, oh, now we need to go win this game versus, yeah, we have a lead. Like, why don't we just stretch this thing? And then when the Rams come back, then you're like, okay, let's be the team that kicks the walk-off field goal versus being the team who gets the walk-off field goal kicked on us again. And I just thought I thought he was doing it a little backwards for whatever reason. And maybe, and there's things that I don't know, maybe his personnel wasn't right. Maybe JP wasn't right. We saw a lot of Guerrero late in the game. We saw a lot of Jennings and very little Ayuk. Ayuk looked very uncomfortable out there on that field. And I know there's going to be two scapegoats in this game. One of them is going to be Ronnie Bell, and he was flat out awful. But he shouldn't have even been on the field if they would have played the type of football that they should have played today. So that's one. And the second one's going to be Moody. To be a goat for missing a 57-yard field goal is a little rough. But that, you know, every kickers are making those plus 50 yarders like crazy this year. And yeah, you know, he should have made it. He had clearly enough leg. I'm not sure he was awake. He was a little sleepy in the moment, but those are going to be the two scapegoats. I highly doubt Shanahan will get a lot of negative attention in today's game, but it's just a trend, and maybe a trend to his career, that we see both Super Bowls the Niners lost. They were winning by 10 points, I think, or more in both games. And the other team came back because of this function of not being able to play with the lead. So this is week 3 in the NFL. I'm not even comparing it to Super Bowls. The Niners are clearly talented. I think they are underperforming in all areas of the field. But it is just something that I kind of wonder about when I watch games like this.
Absolutely. That is, I think, in how you parse that out when we get to Blame Pie, there is a section that I think kind of, you know, hits on what you're talking about. But I always kind of fall, you know, and we'll get there, but I it's kind of difficult for me to figure out what part the coach plays when execution is poor. How much does a play call have to do with, you know, a poorly executed play? Are the players just being put in a bad position? I don't have the knowledge to break that down, but there are key moments, not just at the end of the game, throughout the game, you know, on third downs, on fourth downs, you know, you talked about closing out the game. There are places where when you look at the offensive numbers, you would say it was an efficient game, and you know, they outgained the Rams by like 100 yards, yet you know, our third down efficiency was lackluster. There were and then you know, my God, the penalties, it seemed like every, you know, it not only were there a lot of them, it seemed like they were always in key spots where, you know, it made the third down longer, or it gave the Rams an advantage. There was just so much. And like you say, when we get to things we didn't like, there were so many. But I'm getting depressed. Let's talk about Juwan Jennings. My God,
that is something that we definitely liked out there on the field. And what is the Shaq meme when he was talking to Christian Wood on the TNT show? And he was like, I apologize because I didn't know your game that well or whatever. Now, we love JJ because he's a possession receiver. He comes up big on third down. He comes up big on fourth down. But as a number two, and we saw this with JJ Stokes, just the lack of separation can often hinder, unless the guy on the other side is Tyreek Hill. You know, then you have like a great counterpart. And JJ just said, yeah, whatever, I'm slow, but I'm still getting open. And that dude, not only did he get open, but he caught everything. He may have had one drop, I think, early in the game, but it was like on a tough pass. But man, you know, we're not going to spoil the Coach Singh Player of the Week because I really only think there's maybe two guys who are even on a possible list. But I, you know, JJ's got to be high up on that list. But man, that was really fun to watch. And then when he scored the touchdown and he disappeared from my television screen, and I was like, Is that Bo, a little bit of Bo Jackson there? You know, running over Brian Bosworth in Monday Night Football. I like that. There is a gamesmanship to him that I really enjoy. Just great game for him.
Yeah, Niners got their $4 million worth today. So, I mean, it was very impressive. And he was basically, you know, I'm not going to say he was basically offense because they did have 137 yards on the ground.
41 of them was Brock, though.
Yeah, that's problematic for sure.
Shanahan got to his 34 rushing attempts, but I don't think he wanted 10 of them to be Brock.
Yeah, probably not. Because like you say, it was only two of them were like designed.
Yeah.
And the rest were, he was trying to save his life. It seemed like, you know, but yeah, just an awesome game for Jennings.
So I guess the only other thing on my list as far as stuff that I thought really stood out in a positive way is Brock. Brock was 22 of 30. He almost got to the 300-yard mark. He did have the three touchdowns to Juwan. And I think more impressively, maybe this is the most impressive part of his game today. Now, in some instances, like Stafford, I thought Stafford took smart sacks in this game. Stafford knew when his bread was buttered and when they should go back in the huddle and create and call a different play. Brock had one sack today. And I think there was probably like the pass blocking could have led to maybe five sacks today. But it's almost like he understands where the leaks are. So he's looking directly in the area of where he thinks who's going to get beat, and he's moving in the proper direction. Now, I would hate to see this happen every game because there's going to be moments where he does not see where the leaks are, and he's going to take a blindside hit trying to run away from it, and there will be opportunities where he should take sacks that he's not taking. But I thought today his escapability was a really maybe the best part of his game because he gave the offense opportunities where in other scenarios they may have gotten locked down with Jimmy G. What I was thinking of was when I was watching some of these plays is Jimmy G throws that one into the ground. Jimmy G throws that one a little early because he doesn't have that escapability necessarily. But I thought Brock created opportunities with his legs. I just don't think that is always going to be smart on his end against other teams.
On the last drive, that the play where he ran for like 100 yards to gain three, there were several points in time where it could have been disastrous and threw us out of it. He just needed to give himself up at that point.
But, you know, he also missed Ayuk. Ayuk was open.
Wide open.
He was open twice, too. He was open right on the first read, and I don't know what Brock saw as to not throw it. He saw something because he looked directly at him, didn't throw it, and then he rolled out, and Ayuk kind of came with him, and he was open again, and then there was another person open underneath that he didn't throw it to. So yeah, whatever those reasons were, I'm sure. I don't know if we'll ever hear about why, but
don't know. You can't know what he saw, but
yes,
I love his escapability and his athleticism, but it's at that point in the game, it's about risk management. And after all of that, we came up with like a 3-yard gain. it wasn't the risk of him getting hit, fumbling, you know, taking a massive loss. All of those things were put into play, and there was just it was a circumstance where the down, it was all downside. There was no upside to any of that.
Yep.
And we're talking about risk and mitigation at that point. We were trying to get to the field goal at that point. Just do what you have to do to end that play. rather than continue to try to, because again, we, there were big plays to be made, but for whatever reason you missed them. So again, that, you know, but that's nitpicking. He was very efficient. The fumble wasn't great. Didn't help us. But other than, you know, he didn't throw any interceptions, which is always
there wasn't even a ball that looked like it was even in harm's way all game long. Now, yeah, this Rams defense, I will say, the reason why I wanted them to go for the throat early on is because they are vastly different with no 99 there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just like, whoa, this is what it feels like to not have to worry and watch that dude every single snap. And I'm like, you got, just keep, just mow through these guys. Like, this is the opportunity to do that instead of, you know, play the way that they did. I would have loved to see Shanahan stick with Jordan Mason. I know Jordan Mason's early returns, the first drive, Mason was great. And then the second drive, he wasn't as good. They were maybe keying on him a little bit, and that probably forced Shanahan away from him. What was just that they were keying on him and maybe leaving some stuff open in the passing game. But man, it was just like one of those things where we remember that game, that playoff game where they beat, I think it was it Green Bay or Minnesota, and Jimmy G threw like 8 times or something, and they just kept running it down their throat. I thought they could have done that if they were a little bit more patient today, because the Rams defense is just without that playmaker, they were just, I presume that they were just going to, you know, get tired on that field and probably keel over. And, you know, we talk about this often as well, which is like, who's the tougher team? Like, you know, for whatever reason, Baltimore can out tough the Niners, but that's about it. Who else can do that? Kansas City beats us in different ways, but I was like, are they going to impose their will here? This seemed like a perfect opportunity for Shanahan to coach in against his buddy, missing his three of his top four offensive weapons, and just being like, we're just going to beat them up. Like, that's how we're going to win. We're going to beat them up. We're going to walk into their park, beat them up, run it down their throat, and force them to stop us. And they just didn't do it. I guess maybe my mentality of what the game plan was going to be was just so different from what he wanted to do. And maybe that's why I feel that it was weird, but you know, I just came into this thing going like, the one way that they are sure to win this game is to out tough the Rams, run it down their throat, and open up, you know, nice pitches and catches with Brock and Ayuk and Jennings. And they just threw downfield way more than I thought that they were going to some successes as well. But, you know, then their own defense got left on the field, and the Rams did to us what I thought we were going to do to the Rams, which is just like keep extending, you know, third and short, and just keep slowly and methodically going down the field.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, there we had double-digit leads a couple of times, and it just seemed like, you know, and I guess I understand as a coach, just like you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't. If you start playing to, like, milk the clock, then you're not being aggressive. But then in circumstances like that, if you're throwing the ball and you're not completing it, you're stopping the clock and you're giving the other team more. So, I mean, it's like, which do you do? Which, again, goes back to what I was talking about earlier, is how much is our criticism of the coach and his decision making tied directly to the players and their execution. If they execute what he calls the way he wants them to execute it, then he probably looks like a genius, whatever he calls.
Yeah.
But if they don't, that's where the criticism comes in. Because like I say, it's not like the plays that don't work or the third downs that don't or the fourth downs that don't work ever are a function of poor design. If they are executed the way he drew them up, then they would be successful. I mean, he is not, you see in high school sometimes where the play had no chance of ever being successful regardless of what the players did. And, you know, Kyle is at a level that he doesn't make those kind of decisions. If they do what they're supposed to do, all of it's going to work. But sometimes, you know, they just don't, you know, they don't block it well. Like in the pass game, you know, he doesn't call plays thinking that two guys are going to blow their assignments. It's yeah, just, you know, that's not how it's drawn up. But, you know, but when it happens and Brock is immediately got pressure in his face, you know, it changes the success of that play, which again, it's just no fault of Brendel's that he is just too small to be Brock Purdy's center. I will die on that hill. They need to have a big mountain of a person in front of Brock and just make sure, what, even if it is to the detriment of the run game, which is what it is
yeah,
you want the center to be able to get out and be able to move and lead and pull and get out to the second level. Therefore, the guy has to be more athletic. I just think when you have a quarterback of Brock's stature, it's most important to have somebody who is not going to allow there to be pressure when he drops back to throw the ball. You saw, again, I keep referencing it with Drew Brees. That was always a cornerstone of the Saints. Their guard, center, guard combination was always one of the most stout in the league. And Brees rarely had to deal with pressure in his face and was famous for being able to step up in the pocket and make the plays he needed to make, you know, because of with his stature, he needed to be able to have that vision clear, and he couldn't have a cloudy pocket to deal with. I just think as moving forward with Brock, that's something we need to consider. We need to consider making sure that those guys, their job one for them is to make sure that he has a clean pocket, which is at odds with how we play. You know, we want to control the game through the run game. And in the Shanahan offense, that means those guys have to be mobile. So I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you get a big or a sturdy center who can also make all the blocks that you need him to make in the run game. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's something that I think you really need to consider, because I think while he is athletic, I think from a defensive standpoint, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I think that if we've got him rolling around instead of making decisions, making quick reads, and getting the ball out of his hand. I think that's a win for us. He obviously is mobile enough to make those plays, but I think that you let the defense off the hook when he's not in the pocket. Just, I think he's best when it's 1-2, get the ball out. I think that's when he is at his best and most accurate. Not to say he is not accurate on the move. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not saying he can't make plays with his legs. I think optimal Brock is 1 read, 2 read, get it out. He's more accurate that way. He's able to put the ball in places where those guys can maximize the yak. I just think that's the best Brock Purdy. Not to say that the other Brock Purdy isn't good, because it is, but I think we should try to put him in situations most of the time. You talk about risk management, is we want to put him in situations to be the best version of himself most of the time.
Yeah.
And I think that is, if you've got a strong interior pass protection, gives him that.
Yeah. No, I think that would be every offensive coordinator would like that, because it makes what their play calls for. I think the one thing that I don't want to do on this show is do like the very reactive fan, because you know if you see Twitter today,
there's plenty of that.
But one of my old, I won't even say her name, but one of my old early Twitter friends. So I've been on Twitter probably since like, I want to say like 07 ish timeframe, and one of the early use cases for Twitter for me was I was able to meet up with a lot of Giants fan people who are just also on Twitter. So we would do all these tweet ups and stuff. And so I have this like really fun connection with about, you know, 20 Giants fans who I don't even really know without Twitter. And one of them, she basically said on her Twitter after today's game, if anybody wants club level seats, let me know. Not going to any games this year. Like that was her response. So she's got season tickets. And so what I don't want to do is say that the game that they played today, this is who they are. Because again,
no
Debo, no C-Mac, no Kittle, which that could be another reason why Shanahan wasn't super comfortable sticking with the run, is Kittle. We know how dependent they are on Kittle being as good as he is. On the defensive side, still no Dre. Still no Dre does hurt us in an extent. I don't know why Campbell was one-on-one with the receiver near the end of the game to get that pass interference call. Like, I don't know what that problem was or why he's there. Maybe he's the best. Yidam has had a tough 3 games so far. I know that your guy, Renardo.
Oh my gosh.
He had one play today and it was a rough one.
Again, that I've been saying, I mean, I watched him a ton at Florida and Florida State, excuse me. And that's his thing, is he is super physical, and he was always super physical, which he was able to be in college. And I said when we drafted him, you just can't play that style. You're not going to be able to ride dudes in the NFL. They just don't allow it. They don't allow it. And the play that he got called on, that is quintessential. That's how he plays. He's going to get on you and he's just going to ride you like a sled. And that, when they drafted him, I said, I've never seen it. I don't see who's the player, who's his comp. My comp for him was Josh Norman. And that was great. In 2018, that style of play has been legislated out of the game. And he needs to, if he's going to be a successful player, he's going to have to figure out a different way to be. But I just think it's hard to ask a dude to play. He's played one way his entire life And then now at the highest level of the game, you're going to ask him to play against some of the best athletes in the world. We're going to ask him to play a completely different way. Good luck. Yeah. I mean, it's a problem. But like, that was Sanchez today, right?
Yes.
Like he said, you know, Campbell in coverage, that's just not his game. That's, you know, so he was being asked to do something that is not in his wheelhouse, and that's cover. And he didn't do he did the best he could. I mean, he clearly, you know, ran through the guy, but what do you expect? I mean, that's just not how he plays.
You mentioned Sanchez, and you know, I have an ear for the broadcaster because I went to school for it, and you know, I enjoy it when it's really, really good, and I don't like it very much when it's bad. And Sanchez, when he first started doing it, he kind of did it as kind of like this dumb jock kind of guy. And he still kind of does it like that, but it's less charming now that I've heard him for like 3 or 4 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He makes weird noises because I think he sees stuff that he cannot say because he doesn't want to step on the play-by-play guy. By the way, I like the play-by-play guy. I mean, I think he's really good. But so he's making these weird noises and he's kind of laughing. And I think he's trying to do like the Tony Romo thing where he's like the good buddy sitting on your couch who's also a really smart quarterback. But this is the thing that bothered me the most. And I highly doubt anybody will really catch on to this. So I think it was Tutu Atwell who had made a catch that then wasn't a catch. And he was on the ground, basically. He looked like something, he got hit or something. And Sanchez says, it looks like he's hurt. And so if you're on radio where the viewers cannot see, like we can clearly see that it looks like he's hurt. What he probably should say is that Tutu Atwell, if he doesn't know why, if he knew why, then he could sort of describe why he may be shaken up. He could have said, Tutu Atwell's on the ground, shaken up on the play, something like that, because that's actual facts. But when you say, it looks like anything, the viewers have a better view of the game or just as good of a game as Sanchez does. So it's stuff like that where I'm like, okay, you know, radio, you know, maybe you could say that, but this is TV, man. You gotta be a little sharper with your language. The dumb jock stuff isn't fantastic in that way. But also, the man bun is not a professional broadcaster haircut.
Yeah, that's
it. Wasn't a good look.
Problematic. Yeah. You know, how do we, you know, and again, I am not here for like respectability politics, but yeah, there are just certain things that you expect when you tune in to your broadcast. And you know, a man bun and like flip-flops is just it's just not a good look.
Like, he doesn't have to be Pat Summerall, right? He doesn't have to be a robot. He can be, he can have personality.
Yeah.
But I think there's this lean towards, I may have just created a new term, McAfee-ing everything.
Yes.
I understand McAfee. I like a lot of what McAfee does. I think he's got, I think he's actually a pretty brilliant guy when it comes to influencer status and all of that. I think he's actually really good at that stuff. But like the lean to that on a professional NFL broadcast, I would let McAfee be McAfee, and I would lean a little bit closer.
Like a
Greg Olson, I would say.
I wouldn't necessarily want McAfee on games. No. You know, I think it's appropriate, or appropriate is probably the wrong word, but in his sphere, you know, there was a lot of hubbub like last week, you know, the time gets, you know, it's crazy, but you know, whether or not he was drunk on air,
right.
You know, and he will imbibe during his show, which has always been kind of a taboo to like drink, you know, in a broadcast, but he does that and it works for him. But it's not something that I wouldn't want to see Sanchez standing when they do the booth shot. I wouldn't want to see him there with, or him or Troy. I wouldn't want to see beers.
Yeah,
on
exactly.
There. Yeah. I mean, I'm
probably being a hypocrite because on Thompson to Clark, the whole hook to the show originally was that Brad and I were going to have a glass of bourbon while we were chopping it up about the Giants. That is a little, you know, we're like a buddy podcast.
Yeah.
And we also grew up broadcasting. So like we understood the stakes of doing that. So we were probably overly appropriate just knowing, but the only time that has worked on a medium for me, and this tells you how much I do not want to talk about this 49er game, by the way. Have you heard the podcast Drink Champs?
Yes. Love it.
That's the only podcast I think where actually, you know, getting drunk, and I don't know if Nori is necessarily really drinking all the things that he says he's drinking on the show, but that is where it has worked.
Right.
And then
his he could be like 50 Cent in it, where his Hennessy is actually iced tea, you know. So
well, I know Rick, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, who seemingly has been canceled by a lot of people these days. But the stories of him out drinking people, a lot of the time he was maybe throwing a couple over the shoulder when people weren't looking. So like that whole thing, you know, I think could be a little overstated, but
yeah.
Nori on drink champs. I mean, Nori has great advice for what I would tell 49ers fans today, which is you got to relax. All right.
It's a long season.
All right.
Season.
Let's get into the rest of what we didn't like. And I'm so out of it from the perspective of talking about this game. I didn't even play the first soundbite for Coach Singh, but we'll play the what we didn't like soundbite.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
All right. Number one on my list. And again, this may not be the most important thing. I do think there are lots of reasons why they lost today. Special teams just gets worse every week.
Oh my God.
They gave up a fourth down on a fake punt that turned into a first down. They got the return that you mentioned late in the game when they just could not have it, when they needed when they needed them to drive down 40 to 50 yards to actually get into field goal range instead of the 20 yards that they needed or whatever it was. Moody missed the field goal. The punt on that return was not fantastic.
Nope.
I don't like it. Almost feels like Shanahan doesn't want to be bothered with that entire thing, that he's just like, I want to focus on the things that matter. Special teams is a bunch of BS. I don't even know why it exists. It's not real football. I'm going to like not even pay attention to it. And I could understand that if this was 10 years ago, when kickers weren't booting 50 yarders regularly, when, you know, when kickers weren't kicking balls out of the end zone regularly, but it does seem like special teams in today's NFL is more important than ever. Maybe. I mean, we don't have, you know, Dave Meggett returning punts like crazy, or Prime returning punts. Like, we don't have a lot of that anymore. But the field goal game and the punt block that we saw last week and those kind of mishaps, I mean, they're just like tempo changing plays. And it's a bad look for a team to be this good and this talented and have so much money tied up into all of these star players and for their special teams to just be shambles.
Yeah, it's a problem, you know. And then because you get, it's something that I really look into, you know, obviously the two things that we talked about so far, but you know, we didn't make a play in the return game, in the punt return game. No, we were just a non-factor there. Mitch didn't flip the field, especially in times when we definitely needed it to be done. And like you say, that the last punt was not great. It was clear that that coverage was set up to have more hang time than they got. So the ball just got on my man quicker than the coverage was set up to accommodate. And I get it. You know, I condone is not the word, but that's, you know, I'm not I don't agree with Shanahan's assessment. But then what if you're going to take that tack, then you have to spend some money to put somebody in that spot who you can just leave it to and have them know that it's taken care of. Like Green Bay, when they were having all their issues for a long time, they went ahead when Raiders decided to fire Bisacci, they hired him, and it has made a difference. He is somebody who, say what you will about him as a head coach, he probably should have kept that job, honestly. But he's clearly more competent than to run more than just the special team. So when you give him the role of running the special teams, it's what you're getting, your a head coach level coach running that unit. So it's something that LaFleur doesn't have to think about. He can just focus on the offense and just let Bisaccia do that. And I don't have even have to think about it. You have to make that kind of hire if you know you're going to be that kind of hands off with it. You can't have somebody who is just a mediocre coach over there handling it. It hasn't worked. And when in a game where I believe that we're at a place where winning in the margins is important, because every edge in a game like today, one special teams play makes the difference between a win and loss. If you take away any one of those, if Moody makes his kick and everything else goes the way it goes, we win the game.
Yeah.
If Moody misses the kick, but we are able to pin them back on that punt, we probably win that game. It's just, so it's not like those mistakes. If somebody makes a play on a punt at some point, you know, it's just those, it's not just extras at this point. You need to win somewhere in the margins, and that's a place to do it. And we just don't. Throughout the Shanahan era, we have never been a place where we are gaining an advantage. Mm-hmm. Even when you had a kicker like who was reliable, like Robbie, and Mitch has been good. But we have never been gaining advantages through our special teams. At best, we're just trying not to have them not lose games for us. It's never been that is something we can count on to give us an advantage. And that's problematic. It's a problem.
What is on your list for things that we did not like?
Penalties. Again, we talked about that. They were just really, you know, momentum killers, you know, defensive pass interference, a couple of holding calls. They wiped out big gains, or they gave the Rams favorable field position. It just killed you. We got, you know, and if we're going to be a good football team, we've got to be able to clean that up. And again, I guess it kind of goes and kind of hand in hand with special teams. When we're fully loaded and you've got McCaffrey and you've got Kittle and you've got Debo and you've got BA and everybody, the machine is humming at peak efficiency, maybe that 7-for-111 isn't as huge.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in a situation where you don't have three of those guys and you're asking Brock to do it with today, it was basically JJ, and that was it for whatever reason. You know, the running game was, you know, it got increasingly inefficient as the game went on. You know, BA was, you know, there were times when he was open, he didn't get hit. And then there was times he was, you know, they were doing a good job covering him. But again, it's like those edges that you gain, or those yards that you give up with those penalties, when you're not at peak efficiency offensively, it shows more. So hopefully at some point we will be at full strength, and these things maybe won't be as crucial as they seem now. But while we are as we are currently, you know, constituted, we don't have the leeway to give up, you know, those type of advantages in either one of those two auxiliary areas.
Trent got cramp in his calf again, and who was the sideline reporter, I forget her name, I think she said that he had even mentioned that he had never missed camp like this before, though he did sit out like a whole season in a contract dispute, as far mm-hmm. as from what I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But that the lack of camp has really hurt him with his conditioning, which makes a whole lot of sense. It was the big bet for him, and the Niners will be okay with it because he's still the best that they have and one of the best in the league. But that is a little worrisome. You would hope that it's just he needs to get in better shape. You would hope that it doesn't lead to further injuries by him not being in his top shape. And then the other one, Brandon Ayuk, we said it the day that he signed. If he doesn't start fast, he's going to get a lot of blame for not playing well. And that is absolutely what has happened so far. All of a sudden, Juwan Jennings is the hero for taking less money, and Brandon Ayuk is the goat, and not the good goat, the bad goat, for holding out and asking for money. And I think the thing that's very clear right now is he and Brock are just not simpatico. They are not on the same page, which was their strength the last 2 years. Is they just seemed like they knew exactly what each other was thinking, and they were always in sync. And right now, like, there was the slant where, and it's funny because Mark Sanchez was very diplomatic in saying Brandon Ayuk will tell you that he should have caught that ball, but Brock threw it behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But then did Brandon stop the route? So that, like, there was like a second guessing of whose fault it really was. But it was just stuff like that where you're like, okay, when they're humming, he hits Ayuk in stride, and Ayuk runs another 15 yards, and that gets the offense going. Right now, he throws it a little bit behind Ayuk. Ayuk is probably peeking a little bit over the middle where he is because he's in big man's land, and it just goes through his hands, and then you get nothing out of it. So that seems to be a problem, and something that you would think, just on muscle memory alone, would be fixed sooner than later. So I'm just hopeful that those things figure themselves out, because if they don't, they're just going to be this excuse for the entire year. And like, it, rather than it being an excuse, to me, it's part of the NFL. It's part of what every team deals with. Jamar Chase, who is all world, is kind of dealing with the same thing. And you would think that because of his talent, and there's, you know, he's at the tip top of the NFL as far as wide receiver talent, that he would just be able to jump back on the field and be fine. And he has not yet. He and Burrow are not, you know, they're not simpatico either. So those are things that I hope that are just kind of like the story now early in the season. And as we get into the middle of the season, they will not be the story, and we'll sort of forget about it. That is my hope.
Yeah. And I, you know how, because sorry, I forgot to plug in my computer. Because of just the way I look at things, it, you know, and it is what it is, but it always leads me to, well, he held out, and see the actor effects. Well, the team pussyfooted around and didn't get him signed. So you could look at it that way, that their inactivity and their lack of willingness to come strong earlier have put them. So whoever, you know, we can play blame pie, but whatever it is. So you, if you know that getting these, not getting these guys out there, not having them in camp has the potential of having this kind of effect, maybe you should be a little bit more aggressive in getting them signed earlier, you know, where it's, you know, it's always on the players. Well, you shouldn't want to get your business handled. You should just be out here coming to work, and hopefully, you know, it, Parag and Jed, it'll be, you know, they'll find it in their heart to give you what it is that you feel you're owed, which it, that never happens. And these guys, be it Trent or be it Brandon, you will never convince me that they would not have got, that they would have gotten the deals they got if they had just been good soldiers and came in and dutifully, you know, played, you know, did their thing, their work in training camp. And if they had gotten injured in training camp, that it would have been no problem. The team would have still went on ahead and taken care of them. That's bull. Mm-hmm. No. So you had
you lose your entire leverage like that.
It was business, and, you know, it was time for business, and both of them went about their business and got the business handled. And now, obviously, not being in training camp is going to have an effect, and we're seeing that. So, you know, when the team decided that they didn't prioritize getting them signed sooner, they made that decision. And when the players decided that they were prioritizing getting their money over, you know, how they would play early in the season, they, both of them have to own where we're at.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
I wanted to ask you one question to kind of wrap up the things that we didn't like. But before that, because we need to get to Coach Singh, player of the game, and also the blame pie. Ronnie Bell, we think that Ricky Pearsall is on his way back. Ronnie Bell had opportunities today to try and make removing him from the 53 man a lot harder, and he did the opposite. I'm almost like, is he getting cut? This, like, I don't want to see that. Obviously, I'm not here to mess with anybody's livelihood. But in my mind,
it would probably be practice squad. He wouldn't be out on the street. I can't believe that they would cut bait on him completely, because he's got talent. But
there's a demonstrative angle of his drop on third down.
Yeah,
with Shanahan's reaction to that drop.
Yes,
Shanahan is in the picture. So I don't, you know, but it just makes me wonder, with Pearsall coming back, he's probably the guy that they would move out. But it also, I do wonder, like, what does Cowing have to do to get on the field? I didn't see him today at all. And I thought we were going to see him this week, especially with some of the things that they had said. Because even if he was only there to maybe be a little decoy or maybe do a little trick play or something, the offense could have used it. They could have used a little trickery or a little against the grain kind of play, like the Rams ran their wide receiver pass, the reverse pass. They could have, he could have had a couple of Ray Ray plays in there, which could have been really good for Temple, but I don't remember seeing him at all. So that also made me wonder why he wasn't out there. And, you know, why we had so much Ronnie Bell there.
What it reminded me of is, and just going to show you how my mind works, is kind of bizarre, but it reminded me of the drop of the interception in the NFC Championship game with Jaquiski Tartt.
Mm.
Bell did everything. He showed you why he's out there. He ran the route. He got open. He did everything he was supposed to do. He just didn't make the play. And that's a problem. You clearly have talent, and he's out there because he gives the offense a dimension that it otherwise doesn't have, but he's got to make those plays. And it's going to be hard for, I just think it's going to be hard for Shanahan, for him to put him out there again. You want to talk about a doghouse. I don't know how big a doghouse Ronnie Bell is in at this point. And I mean, it's like, you know, what's going to be interesting moving forward in this. So we got one more week before Ricky could even potentially be out there. And he got shot, what was 2 weeks ago, which is crazy that we're even talking about him potentially playing
day before the opener, right? Was it
two Saturdays before the opener.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So who is gonna, is it gonna be Cowing? Is he gonna be? Well, hopefully, number one, hopefully Debo will be back.
Yeah.
And that will kind of put everybody back into their, you know, so then the third receiver again is JJ. But yeah, it's really, I thought that Cowing would get some run, and if he doesn't get any now, it's very telling. I mean, if they're trotting Conley out there, it's a problem.
Conley did play in the playoffs last year.
He did, and he was not bad.
He had a couple big catches
in the Super Bowl. He's not giving you a speed option at all.
More like JJ.
Yeah, exactly. Which just kind of truncates the offense even more.
Okay, here's the thing I wanted to ask you about, and then we'll move on. Which is, how do you think that defense played? Because if you look at the numbers, the Rams were not really able to get big chunks of yardage. It was just 3 yards here, 4 yards here, 3 yards here. But it was almost like Stafford just did the best game manager job of all time. And when the Niners needed to stop late, they could not get it. Even like you look at Kyren Williams's numbers, it's like 3.8 yards per carry. They kept him under 100. But when I watched it, I was like, man, they can't stop this guy. Like, that's what I was thinking as I was watching it. So then when you see the numbers, it's not exactly that. But I just thought, you have Stafford with a bunch of no-name receivers. I just thought they were going to antagonize the hell out of him like Detroit did. I thought they were going to send people. I thought Bosa was going to be on his ass like every time he took more than, you know, a normal drop. I thought Floyd was going to, like, we're going to see him today on the screen, except, you know, making a tackle in the middle of the field. And it was like the opposite. They didn't really they blitzed a little bit in the second half from what I saw. One of them was like a Mooney Ward, like he kind of like he wasn't ready. And so he came super late. It was kind of a waste. But I just didn't I just thought they were going to go get this guy, like Detroit made Stafford's life so hard. And they didn't do any of that. They just let him sort of wind down the play clock, run a play. They didn't. I don't know if they. I mean, it seemed like I was trying to watch Warner to see what Warner was doing, but I didn't sense that they were stacking the box, anything special to stop the run, to force him into passing situations. It just seemed like they played a normal base defense for most of the game. But, you know, my understanding of defensive situations and system and stuff isn't that great. So I was going to ask you what you saw.
Well, the adjustment that I didn't really see coming, because they are an 11 personnel team. It's one back, one tight end, three wide receivers. That has always been Sean McVay. Well, when they came out in 12 today, it was clearly a nod to the fact that they needed to be able to beef up and help protect these third string offensive linemen. So they played with the two tight ends the majority of the game. And I think that limited our, because I thought our defensive line was going to be able to show out on these guys. And while, again, you said it at the in your preamble, the numbers look great. I mean, they hit him five times, they sacked him three times. But if you look at my third thing on the things I didn't like, was the fact that our defense, while we didn't give up a bunch of yards, we didn't get any takeaways, and there weren't really any game-changing plays on the defense. And that was something that, you know, was a letdown to me, as I thought that we would be able to make that Nick or Floyd or Hargrave, that somebody, you know, going up against basically, in spots, third stringers would be able to hit Stafford, cause a fumble, cause a big loss. Because, I mean, even on those three sacks, he only lost 23 yards. So it wasn't like it, you know, they were like big plays. They just, you know, it were sacks. He went down. It was, you know, it was fine. You know, so that was kind of a disappointment that we weren't able to. And again, I guess maybe the two tight ends helped, you know, shore up things. And you mentioned it as well. While they didn't put up a whole bunch of numbers, only 98 yards, he averaged under 4 yards a carry. And their per average number went up because Rivers had a nice run, I guess. But when they needed to get short yardage, you know, it didn't seem like we were putting up much resistance whenever they – you know, so it wasn't like they were getting huge chunks, but when they needed, you know, fourth and short, he was always getting 1 yard more than he needed. And we weren't able to bow up and just stop him. And it was disappointing. It was something I definitely didn't like.
Yeah. Okay, what are the numbers for your blame pie this week?
Blame pie this week, I kind of did it a little different because it was a little different game. Blame pie was, I'm sorry, folks, I wasn't able to print it out. I had to kind of just get here, so it's on my screen. 40% leading the way for me was the penalties. Mm. Killed multiple drives, landed, gave the Rams, you know, easy yardage. So for me, it was 40%, you know, defensive pass interference. We just shot ourselves in the foot way too many times. So that was 40% for me. 25% was Jake Moody's, well, special teams, not Jake Moody specifically, but the missed field goal kind of was a killer. Punt returns, you know, the coverage was awful. So that was huge. 20% was the offensive execution. We kind of talked about that. You know, what was it, Shanahan and his calls? The numbers were solid. I mean, it's hard to find a quibble other than we didn't close out drives in the red zone. We didn't, you know, we were, you know, right at like 50%. On third downs, especially late in the game, there were times where we could have taken control, several times where we could have taken control of the game. And you had talked about if we just decide to run the ball, maybe we're able to do it. But by that time in the game, it seems like Kyle, for whatever reason, did not believe in them. And we're, you know, having throwing three passes in a row and, you know, going three and out. It's just that was a problem. So offensive execution was 20%. And then for me, the 15% was defensive misses. We didn't, you know, it wasn't awful. We just did not make any big plays. And it was something for me that was a key to the game. I just knew when I watched that game last week with Detroit, they just were like rabid dogs. You know, they saw blood in the water with, you know, these third string offensive linemen coming out there, and they made plays. And I just assumed that all of our guys, like especially like somebody like Nick, was going to eat.
Yeah.
Or if they double or triple team Nick, that it would allow the other guys to eat, you know, that Floyd and the other guys would get one-on-ones and that they would be able to make the Rams pay. But we just didn't do it. So it got 15% for me. So, yeah.
I will say I was watching Bosa late, and the play calling and the way, like, there were moments where they called pass and Bosa didn't get that crazy jump start that he usually gets. And I think it was because he was like assuming run. And so just the little timing stuff, because there were moments where, you know, he was trying to get that crazy jump that he usually gets. And then it's like run play to the other side. And you just look at him. He's like, oh, God, like,
yeah,
you know, and like they did a lot of stuff like that to keep him at bay. But again, I don't know how the Niners look at that stuff or how the Rams look at that stuff or how Nick himself looks at that stuff. I think about, you know, him being the most valuable player probably on the team. He and Trent and, you know, now Brock, just because he is playing the most important position. But he in the three games so far, he hasn't really been that much of a difference maker. And Little hasn't. Floyd hasn't done much either
at all.
So it almost looks like the pass rush isn't there. And that's one of the things that we've talked about consistently on this show about what helps the secondary is the pass rush getting there. And, you know, Nick Wagoner's statement that I mentioned before the season started of the secondary being the best, the best team on the defense, that has not come to fruition yet because they struggled in many situations. And I don't want to pick on Yidam, but he's on the field a lot and he seems to get picked on. So
yeah, and then last week, obviously, and we talked about it then that you really don't like blame a team or a secondary for JJ going off, because, you know, he's probably the best wide receiver in the world and he's gonna get his. But still, you like, if they are what Nick Wagner believed in to be, you have thought that they would have put up much, you know, a bigger fight than they really did. And the thing of it is just like last season, Nick's numbers are good. It's not like he's not doing his job. He's just not making the big plays that you expect. And again, I don't know if fair or not. That Chris Jones dude, you can say what you want about him. And it was, you know, for a long time, he was, you know, fat and lazy. And that was like his, you know, the claim to fame. But man, that dude, when it's time to make a big play, you know, it shows up against us, but it's just the league. He is there when a play needs to be made, you know, Super Bowls, NFC Championship, last year, the NFC Championship game, he wrecked that game to get them into the Super Bowl. And then when it was time to close the show against us, He did it. Those are the moments that I'm looking for from Nick that we just haven't seen. And you, those caliber of players, him, Hutchinson, Watt is another one.
Yeah.
It don't matter. Double team, triple teams. When the chips are down and there's a play that needs to be made, TJ Watt somehow finds a way to get it done. And Nick is that echelon of player. So if we're hard on him, it is out of the fact that we respect his game and expect that those type of plays from him when the chips are down, regardless of whether or not they're moving the coverage, I mean, moving the blocking scheme to him, that level of player defeats that.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't. So it's noticeable.
All right, let's get to the player of the game here.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Who is the Coach Singh Week 3 player of the game?
It is Colton McKivitz. No, it's Juwan Jennings. We try to not spoil the Coach Singh player of the game, but he was pretty much the player of the game after his first touchdown catch to me.
Yeah.
And he had a monster game. What did it end up being? 11 catches? It was insane. It was crazy.
He was 11 for 175 with 3 touchdowns.
12 targets, 11 catches, 3 touchdowns, 175 yards. I mean, it was a virtuoso performance. You know, I jokingly said in the beginning, he earned that whole $4 million. So now we love JJ, and then, you know, according to Hoyle, now next season when he wants more money, y'all gonna hate him and he's a diva and and a cancer. But now today we'll love him because, you know, he played well. He played excellently, and he's the player of the game.
Yeah, the one thing that's interesting is the targets were not that far off with Jennings and Ayuk. Jennings had 12. Made 11 catches. Ayuk had 10 and only had 5 catches. Yeah. So, interesting.
And I mean, he got there. Some, I don't want to, you know, not making excuses, but, you know, he had some tough catches and there were some throws that, you know, legitimately, like you had talked about with Sanchez talking about trying to split the baby.
Yeah.
You know, catches that he should have made that, but also he should have, if it's in his radius, he probably could catch it, but Brock could have probably made a better throw to allow him to make the catch. So again, yeah, it is interesting, but then the other aspect of that is the target distribution. When you look at it, it was him and Ayuk, and then, you know, a bunch of nothing, you know, Ronnie Bell dropped 2 of his 3, made 1, and then, you know, it's Sauber with 2 and Mason with 2 and Juszczyk, and that's it. It's going to be, you know, again, hopefully we get those guys back, but it's going to be much easier to defend the 49ers if this assortment of playmakers is what you have to face week in and week out. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully those two guys, Debo and Kittle, can get back sooner rather than later. And hopefully CMC is closer to 5 weeks than 8 weeks. And hopefully Purcell can get back closer to 5 weeks, you know, be back. It would be crazy if he was active and played literally as soon as he was eligible. He got shot, for God's sake. It's not like he had but let's not forget, he was also dealing with an ankle and a shoulder prior to getting shot. So, I mean, it's, I don't think that we should just assume that when he's eligible to come off the IR, that he's going to be immediately active and able to, you know, take those Ronnie Bell reps.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Next week, the Niners play the Patriots. So if they, if there is a team to get right,
you ain't talking about a get right game the Patriots.
It's also one of those games where, you know, we talk about pass rush, we talk about secondary. They can't throw the ball past 5 yards. They're like check down team. So if you think of sports as like momentum and having a good game means that you guys are in a good mood and it leads to other good performances, next week could be the get right game. But I will say this because I said this last week, which is, and I don't think they will because now they are 1-2, but man, the NFL season is long. It is 17 games. I don't know how these guys get themselves up for every single one of these things. They cannot just walk into, they can't sleepwalk into these games. The teams are too, not even the teams, the way that the sport works these days, it's just too up and down. It's too variable to just show up. You're not steamer, you know, maybe if the 85 Bears were in today's sport, you know, maybe they could do that because defensively, but you know, they need to really take care of business. And I'm not talking about, you know, winning a squeaker or, you know, being up big and then letting New England come back and make it a close game. Like, they really need to put their stamp on the game this coming weekend because
what they can't do is allow Ramondre Stevenson to grind out, you know, 6, 7, 8 minute drives. And even if they just end in field goals, they can't let the Patriots dictate the tone and tenor of the game. They can't let it be a messy, you know, close game where we're just playing between the 20s and we're running the ball. And, you know, we get to a point kind of like the Saints, you know, Eagles game where you look up and it's, you know, 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter and it's 7-6 or something crazy like that, where, you know, the 49ers have dominated all aspects of the game, but the scoreboard is still super close. And this team is in a position where they put a drive in, kick a field goal, and then, you know, it can't be close. We need to put our foot on these dudes' throat early and just curb stomp. We need to curb stomp the Patriots. This is the kind of spot at home against those dudes coming cross country. They are sorry. And if they are a type of team that if we go up 21 on them, you know, they might just put Drake May in and see what, you know, what can happen at that point. If we get up early, you know, I hope that we come out with a sense of urgency against these dudes and don't just feel like, oh, they trash. You know, we can just kind of go out here and go
defensively. Patriots can play a little bit.
They're not bad. I mean, they, you know, their scheme, Mayo, and they do a lot of things that Belichick did, and they just play Christian, you know, Christian Rodriguez, like this, Jack, their only really good player. He's a cornerback. He's like the only guy that is like, you know, maybe a Pro Bowl level player, but they just have a bunch of solid dudes. And Gerard Mayo is a good, you know, coordinator, and they can make it a messy game. You have to kind of do what the Jets did and just, you know, dominate them on defense. They shouldn't get no first downs. They should be 3 and out because Brissett, like you say, he's not going to throw the ball further than 5 yards. And you know what? They're going to try to play ball control with Stevenson. We just need to bow up and just not allow it. Just not allow. And that's, you know, that's what the Jets did. They're just like, this ain't happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, they run like something crazy, like 12 plays through two quarters. You know, it wasn't probably not that low, but it was a really low number of plays. They did, it like, had like several three and outs, you know, in the first half. You know, they just couldn't get anything going. And that is the kind of defensive effort we need to put in. We can't let them have any hope. We should be able to take all of their hope away early. And I'm hoping that's what we see next Sunday.
All right. We will be back next Sunday. 1 o'clock game again. So we'll be back after that game is over. Two games in a row. 1 o'clock game against the Patriots, and I believe they have Arizona at home the following week. So two home games coming up, which should be chicken soup for the soul, but we'll see. We'll see how that works. All right. We'll be back next week for Rod. I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes.
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.